FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's 10/3/19. Well, Fed is getting ready to cut yet again. Economic numbers are coming in uniformly bad. What is a central banker to do? Well, if you have an idea, email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. We'll publish your results. We'll maybe even have you on the show and you can talk about it if it's a really great idea. But in the meantime, John Rubino, dollarcollapse.com, is with us, and John has some his ideas of his own. John, as always, welcome. So what is a central banker to do?
Hey, Kerry. Well, this group of Fed governors got handed an unplayable hand. You know, immense amounts of debt in the world, interest rates already pretty close to zero, a recession coming because the expansion is 10 years old, and there's really no way out of this box. But what they've been trying to do is cut rates a little bit, but manage expectations about future rate cuts by calling these rate cuts, you know, insurance or a mid-course calibration, you know, things that imply that maybe that's all there is. But see, that doesn't work with a system that's this addicted to debt, because, you know, you tell a heroin addict that, well, here's a shot, but maybe that's all the heroin you get forever after. And, you know, the addict will go bananas. And that's kind of what's happening to the economy right now and to the financial markets. You know, just in the last couple of days, U.S. manufacturing had a horrendous report, and gross national debt went up by $1.2 trillion in a report that just came out. So now we're at $22.7 trillion for the national debt, and student loan debt soared to $1.6 trillion. And the farm economy, because of the trade war, is tanking, and there are headlines out there about how that pain is going to spread nationwide. And so you add it all up and it spooked the financial markets. So stocks now are tanking. I think the Dow's down, what, 1,000 points in the last 2 days?
Yeah, doing pretty good.
We're entering that stage. You know, we used to call these things taper tantrums, but now, you know, it's potentially something a lot more serious because we're further along in this process. So now the question is, what's the number? How far does the S&P 500 have to drop before the Fed and the other central banks of the world abandon this whole moderation thing and just go into full-on panic? And, you know, start cutting rates aggressively to zero and beyond, and introduce a new QE that's bigger and better and improved because they're buying bonds, but they're also buying stocks and maybe real estate, you know, and all of that stuff is going to happen. And this is the way that it will happen when it does. You know, the economy starts to slow down, stock market tanks, and the central banks of the world realize they have no choice but to just go for it. So, you know, another 2 days like the last two could easily do it, because these guys can't let it get out of hand. You know, they need to preempt the next great recession, because it could easily turn into a great depression. And that's where we are. So, you know, normally you'd say that this is the time to short the hell out of the stock market, right? Just slam everything you can into short positions on the big tech stuff. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the IPO market imploded here. Yeah. That's a big deal too, because one of the drivers of the sense that the financial world was okay was strong tech stocks and all these unicorns that exist out there in the private venture capital market that are worth billions of dollars. And when they go public, it's going to be this massive IPO. Mm-hmm. Well, some of them have tried to go public lately, like Uber and WeWork, and it's been a massive failure. Either, you know, Uber stock has tanked since it went public. WeWork tried to go public, and that was one of the really big shining lights of the unicorn universe.
Oh, yeah.
And it turned out to be some kind of fraud, apparently. You know, it's not even a viable company, maybe.
WeWork has been a fraud from the get-go. I knew this. You know, they had a big presence in Austin, and I knew about a lot of what was going on there. The guy was self-dealing, buying buildings and then leasing them out to WeWork long term at really bad terms and basically pocketing the profit. You know, such things are legal, but maybe not. If they're really not disclosed and they're hidden from plain sight, then they are probably going to be illegal, but can't say. Hey, you mentioned one of the big things was the repo market. You know, that was teetering last week, but now it's supposedly everything's fine there.
Well, the Fed is still having to feed money into it, though. Right. So that's not cured. And whatever it was, see, that the weird thing about the repo market seizing up was that nobody had an explanation for it.
I do.
but the official explanations were, oh, there's a problem with the plumbing, tax. You know, stuff like that. That doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't allay your fears. You know, tax when you payments. Go to the doctor with something, they have to give it a name. And that helps. You know, that's half the battle, just naming the thing that you have. But because otherwise your imagination runs wild. And this time they couldn't name it. Yeah. Apparently they don't know what it is.
Oh, you know, they know very well. It can't be a lot of things for banks to stop buying these things, because what we're talking about is financial institutions repoing each other, like MFS Global. So when it stops, when it seizes up, it's a real simple matter. There's a loss of faith in other banks, you know, actually buying back their collateral. All right. You know, they're going to be covered.
Right.
You can't lose money in the repo market unless. So that one of the things is you always think, well, hey, John, I'm going to borrow some money from you. Here's this diamond. Here's my gold watch as collateral. Right. And I give it to you, because if I said to you, like, John, I'll use my watch as collateral, but I'm going to hold on to it. You're going to say, what are you out of your mind? How do I know? You're going to really, maybe you'll do the same thing with 10 other people. And what banks do is they never physically deliver the collateral. Since it's not like the good old days where you had 8,500 messengers in Wall Street all walking the street delivering securities to one another, you know, they're crossing their paths. It doesn't work that way. It's all electronic book entry securities. And what the borrowing bank is supposed to do is actually put these securities in a custodial account, a trust account, if you will. And then when they buy them back, they take it out. Now, if you're doing that, how many times can you collateralize it, cross-collateralize it? You don't have to be a Chinese company to figure this one out. And as long as rates are steady, you could be like bringing in zillions of dollars every night. So there's a loss of faith, of trust in that market. That's the only thing that can explain it to me. It's just the money didn't disappear.
Okay, Kerry. So let me put this in slightly different terms and see if I understand what you're saying. Say Citigroup has been using the same collateral to take out multiple loans.
I'm not saying that for sure. And they're but there's a loss of faith.
Some big bank is.
Yeah. An MFS Global type company is doing it.
Yeah. But say some big bank is doing that and they're making lots of money, but then it occurs to them, hey, what if the other banks are doing the same thing?
Yeah.
So I don't want to lend to them, you know, and because this happened really suddenly. It's not like the repo market got a little tighter 3 months ago and then a little tighter than that 2 months ago. It just boom, all of a sudden froze
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so somebody came to some realization about how something fundamentally had changed in the creditworthiness of the big banks.
Right.
And they acted accordingly by refusing to lend to them. But nobody's telling us why. And we don't know. You know, if it was one big bank that was in trouble, you could kind of fence that off and just bail it out and get it over with. But that's apparently not the case. So anyhow, the fact that we don't know and there's no official word makes it more serious, because then we can imagine all kinds of things. And that probably fed into the stock market tanking now, because if the banks aren't healthy, the stock market is emphatically not healthy.
And it's so there's liquidity. There's a liquidity issue, and a liquidity issue means they don't have the money to buy back these bonds. You know, like, it's like you can't lose money at it because you just grab the securities. But if the securities aren't there, there's some type of loss of faith, because it's over collateralized securities. And, you know, it's not like these repos ever go it's not like they don't get closed out, the transaction. The only time the transaction doesn't get closed out is when there's a loss of faith or a default or something. So it's hiding a bigger problem. That's my theory. I've heard other experts say there's liquidity is lacking. You know, there was a big thing in Zero Hedge that said the foreign banks have enough money in the U.S. It's the local banks. Their cash holdings have gone down, but they do have $1.4 trillion in excess reserves on deposit with the Fed. Maybe they need more. I don't know the answer to it. So they're still losing money, the banks, even though they've been putting out these stellar profits. I don't know the answer to it, but I do know that it's not what you think it is.
Okay. Well, but hopefully we'll find out in a relatively benign way instead of just JP Morgan Chase closing up some morning, you know, because that's sort of the thing you imagine that some big bank's derivatives book is blowing up on. But anyhow, all this stuff is happening at once. And it's, you know, it's fairly recent, all of it, because the IPO market didn't really blow up until just lately. And the repo thing is just 2 weeks old.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Otis Gold Corp is a gold development and exploration company with quality projects in the pro-mining state of Idaho. Otis's flagship Kilgore project has a resource of 961,000 gold ounces, and its recently published preliminary economic assessment demonstrated an impressive post-tax IRR of 53% at $1,500 gold. In addition to the significant expansion potential at Kilgore, Otis is exploring its highly prospective Oakley project. This Carlin-type gold deposit already has an inferred resource and previous near-surface drilling intersected 123 meters of 0.69 grams per ton gold. Otis Gold Corp trades in New York under the ticker OGLDF and in Toronto under the ticker OOO. That's triple O. To learn more, go to otisgold.com. That's otisgold.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Getting back here to our conundrum here. So IPO market, DOA, WeWork and Uber was like awful. You know, a lot of bad stuff going on here. But somehow it just keeps rolling along. They keep it going. They keep it going.
Well, you know, I started to say before I remembered about the IPO thing, but you know, normally your response to this would be just to short the market big time because you've got multiple crises out there, but you also have multiple reactions to it because the Fed is going to cut interest rates aggressively at some point soon if this keeps up. They're going to announce some new big QE thing soon. And you can bet that the U.S.-China trade war will get resolved somehow. It'll be probably kind of meaningless, but they'll both be able to say, well, we scored a huge victory here. This is, Trump will have a lot of superlatives to say about the trade war being solved because they're going to panic. You know, they're not going to want this thing hanging over a market that's getting ready to collapse. And those things, if history is any kind of a guide, will reassure the financial markets enough to reignite stock prices. So shorting is dangerous here because you've got these big other things waiting to happen. And that's really frustrating because I would love to be shorting everything in sight right now, just based on financial fundamentals. But we still got all this political stuff that's out there and monetary policy stuff. So it makes it really tricky and really dangerous to be shorting the market. But you know, the last couple of days, the shorts got very happy all of a sudden. And
yeah, a lot
of people are thinking about doing it.
It won't last. Won't last. I tend to go along with Martin Armstrong on this, you know, that as long as people think it's going down, it's going up.
Does. You know, say interest rates are -2%, which they will be at some point in this cycle, and Google stock yields a +2%. That's a really attractive idea then. You know, if the company is solid, it's still growing, and it yields 4 percentage points over short-term treasuries. So that is a positive thesis for equities. At the same time, there are a lot of negative factors at work too. You know, corporate profits are shrinking now. They're not just growing more slowly. They're actually going to shrink in the year ahead, very probably. Mm-hmm. And corporate debt is at record levels, just really, really high, which means that it's going to be very difficult for companies to keep adding to their debt, even if rates are extremely low. But that'll be another factor in favor of stocks when and if rates get even lower than they are now, is that the companies that can borrow will borrow, and they'll buy back their stock because it's a cash flow positive activity. You know, you buy back a stock yielding 2% with money that costs you nothing, and you make money on that deal. So it's a very complicated world, but it's one that's clearly heading for that cliff. You know, we can't do very much from here that won't be a situation where the cure is worse than the disease. You know, if we push interest rates down to negative levels, yes, maybe it elevates equity prices. Maybe it generates enough borrowing to result in a little bit of growth, but the negative impact of that would be immense. So we're getting closer, Carrie. Finally, you know, the stopped clocks. Yeah. Time is heading for that one place where the arm on the stop clock is now.
You'll know that we're in good company when Peter Schiff is finally right.
I know. It takes him a long time to be right.
Yeah.
But he is spectacularly right when the time comes.
You know, that reminds
me. And, you know, he's feeling it right now. You can tell by what he's saying.
Oh, yeah. You know, that reminds me of Nassim Taleb, right? Because his model is bet on the most unlikely, because you can get much better odds of it paying off than of the event. Meaning if there's a 1 in 1,000 chance of the event happening, you will get paid 100,000 because the odds don't properly reflect the risk. So it's kind of like when you play the lottery, when the pot gets big enough and you put your money down, you actually have a positive expectation bet, because the odds of winning it are, we'll say, 1 in 400 million to 1, but it's paying $1 billion. So it's paying you twice as much as your odds, but it's such a remote chance that you are going to win that it doesn't matter that it's positive expectation bet. You're not going to win. But in this case, 1,000 to 1, meaning once every 3 years, this crash scenario is going to unfold and he's playing these out of the money puts. It's going to pay. There's no question.
Yeah, because the crash or the financial crisis is a 100% probability. That is absolutely guaranteed, unless there's a nuclear war or an alien invasion. We are going to have a gigantic financial crisis at some point in the not too distant future, just because we've created the conditions where it has to happen. And so what we're seeing now is the struggling of the establishment to try to maintain the illusion that things are okay, and they're running out of tools. So that's how we know it's coming soon, because the number of tools in the toolkit is diminishing down to where it's maybe like 2 right now. There used to be a lot of tools. Now there are a couple, and they're very well used tools, you know, that have been in there a long time and probably aren't going to do as well in the future. So yeah, it's coming. Fascinating times. And then we haven't mentioned the political side of this too, where the Democrats have finally decided to try to impeach Trump, and they're stepping into this gigantic trap.
Oh, it's so obvious. But, and he keeps baiting them. You know, I've heard the analogy. Remember the old Roadrunner cartoons? And he would paint a tunnel on the face of a mountain, and he'd be being chased by Wile E. Coyote, and he would pretend to go into that tunnel, and then Wile E. Coyote would run full speed into it and slam into the side of the mountain. That's what's going to happen here. It's very clear. And he keeps on giving them breadcrumbs, and they keep nibbling at them, and they just can't help themselves. And they're going to be shot down badly here. It's not going to end well.
You know what it is? What's happening is the moderate Democrats are going back to their home districts and they're having, you know, town hall meetings and stuff. And the base is what shows up for those town hall meetings. And everybody in the base wants to get rid of Trump, however it has to happen.
Hook or crook.
Just impeach him or assassinate him. Do whatever you have to do. That's what they're hearing from their people. And it's flustering them. You know, they're finally cracking. And Nancy Pelosi, who has turned out to be a voice of moderation in the last couple of years, which is pretty amazing. Yeah. She's been the one who's been kind of holding that tide back and saying, she says, it's not worth impeaching him. But what she's really saying is that, I don't think we can get away with it. You know, I don't think we can actually do it. So let's not try something that we're going to fail at. She finally broke down and said, okay, you know, let's impeach him. And the thing they're picking on now is this Ukraine phone call, which is nothing. You know, that's, I bet if you recorded all of Trump's phone calls, you could find 100 transcripts that are way worse than that, the thing that he did with Ukraine, where he just said, you know, look into that Biden thing for me, will you? And that's all he said. And that is going to fail miserably if that's all they've got, you know? So what I think they're hoping to do is to start the impeachment process and then just expand it and go, oh, the emoluments clause, you violated that on the third day of your presidency, you know, and they're going to start pulling a bunch of things out and hope that they tarnish Trump's reputation just in time for the election and that they squeak in with Elizabeth Warren or somebody like that. But it doesn't look like it's going to be Joe Biden, because they're sacrificing Joe Biden on this Ukraine thing, because he's really the guy who was corrupt.
Oh, he and my son. God. Who would think there was such opportunity for graft and corruption in such a poor country like the Ukraine, that's half nuclear contaminated, radioactive country anyway after Chernobyl? Who would think there's anything left to steal? But evidently they found the right people.
So Biden's kid, who does not speak the local language, has no experience in the energy business.
He doesn't even know how to fill his car up with gasoline, this kid. He's basically a loser drug addict.
He gets to join the board of their national oil company for $50,000 a month. Yeah. Well, I want a father like that.
Yeah. You know? Hey.
That would be cool.
And he pulled $1.5 billion for a hedge fund. He doesn't even know how to spell hedge out of China. Just happened to take a ride on Air Force Two with creepy Joe. And Joe's just got so many things going against him that he's really unelectable, not to mention his current mental state or lack thereof. The guy cannot be elected. I don't understand. I always said he was a placeholder, that he's not a real candidate. He's there for somebody else to come in later to scare off the competition. But now it looks like he can't even do that. And that's the beauty, because I think it was always the plan to bring in Hillary Clinton later, because Joe was just non-compos mentis.
Can you imagine what this is going to be like if Hillary steps in at the end and says, look, you know, Bernie can't get elected. You don't want to nominate him. And I'm the only other choice. And and they bite. They take that, you know, and then Hillary runs against Trump again. You know, I'm excited to get out of bed in the morning these days, because there is always something where I wake up and go, whoa, man, I'm glad I didn't see that at 4 a.m, or I wouldn't have gotten any sleep at all. You know, it's just continuous now.
Well, what about
politics are a big part of it.
Now the money people are rejecting Warren. All right. She might be a bogus, false populist, that she's going to make all the playing fields level and equalize all the outcomes in life. But she did single-handedly get past the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and every person on Wall Street, every consumer lending collection, anything to do with consumer finance, hates her for that, despises her. And the fact is, they will not let her get elected, because they'll support Trump before they support her. And most of these highfalutin finance people are Democrats, but they're just not going to line up behind Pocahontas.
Well, see, this is the internal contradiction of her campaign, is that she wants to be, you know, the voice for the little guy who's going to take on the big interests and bring about wealth equality and income equality. And those are noble goals. You know, there's nothing wrong with a Democrat
taking on
capital. Yeah. I mean, that's their job. Democrats should be the voice of labor and of equality. But at the same time she's doing that, she wants big money donors.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants Wall Street and Hollywood and you know, the billionaire class in general to finance her campaign, while she's proposing to take them to the cleaners, you know, to cut their wealth in half and do a lot of other things that limit what they see as their God-given right to do any damn thing they want to in this world, because they're the aristocracy. So she can't have both. And it's possible that she gets neither if she tries for both. And Bernie Sanders, who's running the pure, ideologically and intellectually pure campaign, even though he's way out there and you know, might be completely unelectable in a national election, you know, with moderates and Republicans in the same process. He's the guy who is sort of the next one in line if Elizabeth Warren fails. So it could easily be Bernie Sanders against Donald Trump, which, you know, I wrote a thing about that in the last election where in the last primary, where that was the headline, Trump versus Sanders, ? No. And because that's a sign that, you know, the political process is spinning out of control when two complete outsiders end up being the two guys that one of which is going to run the country for the next 4 years. And we could get that, which is just, you know, terrifying in one way, hilarious in another way. So it just depends on, you know, your point of view, what you think of political theater and how scared you are by it. But I, you know, I kind of fall into the funny camp. I just think this is so entertaining to watch the political system spin out of control.
You know what? You didn't hear the news, John. Bernie Sanders had to suspend all of his campaign appearances. He had heart problems. He has a blocked artery or something. They're angioplastying him now. So it doesn't necessarily finish his campaign, but it further puts the emphasis on age and that the guy is like, he looks unhealthy. He sounds unhealthy. And, you know, he's just not going to make it. But hey, politics for another day. It certainly is amusing, entertaining to watch. There's so much going on. You got to keep listening to the show. Keep reading John's site, his work over at dollarcollapse.com. Keep listening to our podcast. Read our work over at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Where do you think it's all going to end up? Just email us. We've been getting so many zillions of comments on the YouTube channel. It's a pleasure, and I'm really going out of my way to answer it. So please, whatever you're listening, podcast, YouTube, please subscribe, like, and share. We've been doing some videos, John. We'll have to get back to that. I've almost mastered the art. Not quite, but almost. And we should be there soon. So with all that out of the way, just the newsletter is out for today. There'll be another one next week. John, we will catch up with you then. And hey, have a good weekend.
Gary, you too. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.